CliffCentral.com.
All right. Well, more and more organizations are embracing a coaching style of leadership, and they can become a platform through which people can achieve their full potential. If that makes sense to you and you want to know more about it, well, you're at the right place, because Leadership Books Unpacked, in their latest episode with Manda Tsifularo and Ngobile Ngobo, they have unpacked Sir John Whitmore's fifth edition of Coaching for Performance and share insights on how you can lead a high-performance culture. That's Leadership Books Unpacked, which is steadily becoming one of our most popular shows. You can get it on cliffcentral.com, wherever you get your podcasts, brought to you by Hollard and Superlead. Very, very exciting stuff. Lebang Hosana is with me. It is a Tuesday morning. It's chilly, chilly, chilly out there. And it's only going to get chillier as we head towards June and July, which is just around the corner, by the way. I mean, you know, you blink and it's payday.
Yeah, a.k.a. tomorrow.
Could not come a day too soon, I think, for a lot of people. Because there are, you know, electricity bills are going up, petrol prices are going up, everything's going up except the salaries, which does not make things easy for anybody. And, of course, you're going to get to the shops and you're going to see, oh, that's a rand more expensive than it was last month, because petrol prices affect everything. So we're going to
everything.
Think about that.
And now you're really, like, sadly at the point where it's like, do I really need these cornflakes? Ugh, I don't really need the cornflakes that much. I can go another week with, like, you have to choose between pouring gas and, like, you know, some of these things that you were just able to get whenever you felt like it. Now it's like really scary times. And Gareth, I don't think it's going to get any better. These next couple of months is where we're really going to start seeing like proper flames, I think.
Well, I know it's somebody else's birthday this Friday.
Oh my God, really? Who? Whoever could you be talking about?
What's her name? It starts with an L. It's something Bonang
Lerato.
No, Lebang. It's you. It's you.
Yeah, that girl. Oh, dude, it's actually my birthday. Can you believe I'm not like moved? Woohoo! Let's make it a thing. I'm so chilled. I'm relaxed. I'm just like kind of just going. I don't know why. If it's because of the pregnancy, maybe it's because of the weather. I can't tell you. But usually I make such a hoo-ha about my birthdays. But this is the one time where I'm like, yo, man, I'm just happy to be alive. I don't even know how old I'm turning. I have to take out my calculator to check.
Well, I hate to break it to you, but the older you get, the less you want to celebrate birthdays. And I mean, I've got a couple of years ahead of you here. And I'm in no hurry to make a fuss about my birthdays anymore. I didn't last year. I didn't the year before. Congo Chris says, Lebang is so old, her ID number starts with one. Or is just one.
You got me. Busted.
Oh, my God. Imagine. So,
yeah,
so what happens to people? Sounds kind of obvious, but what happens to people who were born? They're still alive. I mean, there's that one woman who claims to be 120 or something. Let's say they were born in, you know, 1912, because, you know, or even 1922, frankly, they would have a 22 at the beginning of their number, just like someone who's born right now. Do we have enough numbers? I mean, we must have, right? The thing is long enough.
They're definitely reshuffling.
So if you're really old, if you're turning 100 this year, you were born in 1922 and you're still alive, then you could, people might mistake you by, if they just look at your ID number, for being newborn.
But you won't have an ID if you're a newborn.
What are you doing? You're not filling in forms or anything, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So you get like a 20-year grace period there, I suppose. All right. So what is this? Yeah. What is the story with this movie? I haven't seen it. It's called Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. What is this?
Gareth, come on. You haven't seen it. I really was expecting you, of all people, to at least have seen it by now.
What is it?
It's probably the
I don't know. I've never even heard of it, let alone seen it.
Are you serious?
Promise you.
Just look it up. Everything, everywhere, all at once. And it's exactly that. It's the story of, I don't want to give away too much. Just, it's brilliant. It's a story of a woman who lives this life and multiple lives. You know, there's like this thing in cinema now where like multiverse universes are like, oh, it's like in fashion.
Yes.
You know, like crossover. So we see this woman live everything, everywhere, all at once, and how that all comes together and how beautiful. It's just, it's a piece of art. Visually, it's just lovely. Storyline is fantastic. I have no doubt that you are going to enjoy this movie. And Gareth, I would never leave you, lead you astray. I'll never lead you into the dogs.
No,
please check it out.
You haven't. I mean, you told me to watch the Senzo Miyiwa documentary. I watched that. That is some fascinating stuff. I'm very glad. So I took your advice on that one. I'll take your advice on this one. It does sound like one of those mind-bending movies, though. I this whole idea of a multiverse. This is becoming a very, you know, popular trope now, as you rightly pointed out, with what Doctor Strange and all of these other movies. It's a difficult thing to get your head around because I'm not sure that we're built to understand everything, everywhere, all at once. It sounds very, very complicated. I remember I watched that.
Yeah.
What was that movie with Matthew McConaughey where he does space travel, but he goes into the black hole and goes
Interstellar.
And he goes to this planet where time is really, really slow, and then he goes to another place where it's really fast, so he ages very much more or very much less than the other characters. Mm. Listen, by the time I finished that movie, I was like, my brain hurts. And it was a good movie because they actually consulted with, you know, astrophysicists and people who've studied everything from, you know, heavenly bodies to string theory to everything else. And it was absolutely incredible, but very, very much not the movie that you want to do a first date on, or the kind of movie that you just want to lie on the sofa doing nothing, watching, and you kind of want your brain to work less, not more. So I'm hoping that these multiverse movies aren't going to do the same thing to me.
And really, Interstellar was one of the better ones. I don't know if you remember a movie called Tenet. Do you remember Tenet? Oh my word, no. Tenet was horrible. It was like a movie in reverse and you had to watch it like twice just to understand. Really, some of them are just out there to confuse you.
Yeah.
And you sit there and you're like, what exactly are you guys doing? But this one, I promise you, it's not that complicated. As long as you don't have your phone like on you while you're watching, just focus. And you'll understand it. It's not a freaking math quiz. It's not one of these harder ones where you know that they also don't know what they're doing. Because some of them, you're like, come on. Like, till this day, I don't know what the hell was going on in Tenet. I tried. Mm. It was like the first time watching, what was that Leonardo DiCaprio one, that Inception Dream one? It's Inception.
Another remember, one. Yeah, I remember. That was
for
also
the first time. Mm-mm.
No.
You're like, what? You need at least four watches, you know?
Yes.
This one is not one of those.
Right. Okay. Well, I'll give it a try on your recommendation. So just quickly just jumping back to your birthday quickly. Patrick says, birthday is on the 2nd of June, turning 37, approaching 40. Shit. But then people 43 say I'm a baby, lol. People who are 43 say I'm a baby. But I treat birthdays as just another day while friends and family always want to make a fuss. Yeah, I think that's, you know, friends and family do want to make a fuss. I've got another friend who's turning... I can't remember how old he is, but he's got a birthday on Friday, same day as you, Lebang. And he refuses to do anything crazy. He goes to the mall. He buys himself something, not always expensive, but that's just for him. He has breakfast on his own. This is his thing. This is what he does to celebrate his birthday. He doesn't want a fuss. He doesn't want a party. If any of us try to organize anything for him, he gets upset. So,
No surprises, guys. Just keep it moving, you know. But you're definitely right, to each their own. Like, do you remember when Simpiwe had her birthday? It was a thing. There was a birthday list. There was a freaking brunch, lunch. Right. It was like a whole thing. And because that's her personality. So it would make sense for her to do something like that. I just realized that the older I get, and there's a term that goes finishing the calendar. I'm there now. I'm at the calendar's done. I feel less and less, you know, there. Like, I'm just like, can I just be with the people I love? Mm-hmm. If the answer is yes, that just is enough for me. And I'm happy to keep it moving. Yeah.
jumping back and forth to the movies again, Kuhle says that the common factor with Tenet, Inception, and Interstellar, it's all Christopher Nolan. I didn't realize.
Christopher Nolan.
That's genius. Yes. All right, so he's the one behind all these movies that hurt our brains. And then lots of other people talking about Quentin Tarantino and Guy Ritchie with their movies where you sometimes jump around on the timeline. And those were the movies that kind of broke that idea of chronological time. So that's also
yeah. But you see, with that Guy Ritchie era of like Corona, that was like the beginning of all of this, you know, dare I say. Because at that point we had never seen anything like that. You know, it was exciting, it was new. Right. It was almost like the lens into like a whole culture on another side of the world that is actually that hectic and that interesting. So it would always keep you on your toes. Whereas I think this era is more like, we want you to sit and think and calculate. And Doug, I don't want to sit and calculate. I want to watch this movie. I want to see Brad Pitt without a shirt. And I want to go to sleep with a smile on my face.
That's simple.
I'm not asking for a lot.
That's all.
That's it.
That's all you want. Well, all right. I mean, someone else points out, can Matt Damon please stop needing to be rescued in movies? If I had to count, Tracy says the number of times Matt Damon had to be rescued, Saving Private Ryan, The Martian, Interstellar, and a whole bunch of others, to name a few. So, yes, Matt Damon was stopped getting stranded somewhere, because that's the usually the basis of all of these movies. Dr. Robin says, on the birthdays, it's my daughter's birthday today, and it's mine on Friday, too. I'm older than Lebang, out of the baby-making years. Ooh. Well, Lebang has not wasted those baby-making years, let me tell you.
Happy birthday to your daughter as well.
Absolutely. I don't want to feel sorry for myself, because there isn't really a perfect time, but August, when I'm, you know, when I have my birthdays, it's the worst month to have a birthday. It's windy.
Why?
It's dry, it's windy, it's cold. Everything is dead. There are no leaves on the trees. It's miserable outside. You have to be, you know, heaters and things like that around you inside. It's not great. And May, you still got some, it's still pretty. That autumn, you know, the autumn colors are outside. That's a little bit more attractive than August. Just worth,
hey, but it's cold. Worth noting. It's, I think I'd rather, you know what the thing is with August? August knows what it is. August knows that it's cold, and that's that. May is like, I'm cold, but sometimes the sun is out, but sometimes you can get away with a crop top, but please put on the coat. It's just, it's confusing. Whereas August tells you straight up, it's cold, so you, put on the coat. You know what this, you're dealing with.
And just yesterday, around probably about 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon, I was outside, and I was on a call, and I suddenly, like, I felt like the sun was warm. It was actually, I didn't feel freezing cold outside. I was like, this is not so bad. That's not going to be the case for very long, though. Conga Chris says, dear everyone who's born in November, please be advised, you're the result of your mum giving your dad a Valentine's Day present. That's an interesting point. August, just me and Zach, means that our parents, we are New Year's babies. We were made in New Year. You know, 8 to 9 months, yeah. Christmas, New Year, somewhere around
interesting.
There. So we were made in summer, but we were produced 9 months later in like the end of winter. Zach says, my birthday's in August as well. I never tell people when it is. It's boring as fuck. Yeah. You rather don't make a fuss if you don't need to make a fuss. I appreciate that friend of mine. He sent me this message yesterday because I said, ooh, it's your birthday on Friday. He's like, yeah, just remember, I don't want anything. Don't want a fuss. Don't want people to make, don't want a party. Don't want any noise. Don't buy me a present. It's just my quiet day. That's what I do. So different strokes. That's all I can say.
Different strokes. I like that. Zach asked a bit earlier, are we ever going to see the next Rock and Roller from Guy? I've been asking this question all of my life. Like when I first saw Rock and Roller, I even like did a monologue from one of the scenes for my my drama class in matric, my finals. I loved it that much. Since then, every year, I'm like, guys, when is the second Rock and Roller coming out? We need it. We deserve it. I know there's been petitions that have been signed. Right. Guys, Guy Ritchie is just not interested. He doesn't, like, he's just keeping it moving. It doesn't look like we're going to be getting it ever. Like, just sadly. Just cut your hopes there. Because I've been waiting to answer your question. Been waiting.
I know this is probably not the most interesting thing to talk about, but there've got to be some ways we can save some money. And, you know, we often have you know, various people like Joe Camino and so on coming to talk to us about insurance, and I can cut back on that. But you said just now, you know, you might want to leave the cornflakes on the shelf and things like that. What kind of stuff do you realize that when money's tight, you just cut loose? You don't waste money on that stuff anymore. One of my Uber Eats, yeah, you got to say goodbye to that. Although, if you don't cook like me, that's going to be a hard task, because I'll use Uber Eats at least once a week. But now I'll have to cut that out as well. And I do mean it, because everybody's looking at their bank balance at the moment going, can't afford to waste anything. You cannot afford it. So I think that's a good one. I think the other thing is you could probably cut down on alcohol. And I know this hurts some people's feelings. It hits them right in the chest. It's something no one wants to think about. But if you cut down on, you know, alcohol is getting damned expensive too. And if you maybe cut 3/4 of that bill out, I think you find you have a little bit more cash in the bank. And you have a little bit more left over for food and for basics.
I don't know if we're ready for that as a country to have to sit there and say, you know what, I only earn this much, therefore I'll cut down on my alcohol, my bourgeois intake. South Africans are more likely to cut down on their food intake than their alcohol intake. I don't know what it is, but that, you'll always find money for alcohol, guys. You'll complain and say there's no petrol money, there's no food money. There will always be money for alcohol. Good times and alcohol. That's just the South Africa that we live in.
Riv says, in accordance with our conversation earlier, cut down on underwear.
Now we're talking. Yes, now we're talking.
Absolutely.
Let's go commando.
Well, I think I've said this before, but I really haven't done any serious clothes shopping for a long, long time. I've been wearing pretty much the same clothes for the last 3 or 4 years, and they're okay. I mean, none of it's that bad. If it does get that bad, I hope someone will tell me. But that's another area you can get rid of them. Woolies Avos. Oh, yeah, we can cut those out. That'll cut your bond in half. I mean, absolutely. And in my case, I won't have to cut my hand. South Africa would get withdrawal symptoms from cutting down on alcohol. More riots, says Ricky.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes, good idea.
Yeah.
Good point, rather. But not a good idea to cut alcohol.
I think like the luxuries that you have, those things you can cut out, whatever those luxuries are for you in your personal life, where you know you don't need this, but it's a nice to have, and just because you can afford it, very soon you're probably going to have to start thinking like that. Like, I don't need to actually eat out every weekend. I don't actually need to, you know, buy myself that thing or whatever the case is. Things that you used to be able to afford are really, you know.
I mentioned last week that now I very seriously plan, if I do a trip to the office, then I try to do everything else in that trip as well. So I'll go for my haircut, I'll go to the shops, I'll try to do it all on the same day that I go to the office. And then I cut down on petrol because I'm only doing one. You know, so for example, like Wednesdays, I'm not going to leave the house, so I don't have to waste money on an unnecessary trip, because petrol is going to be the big one. And the other one is to go around your house and find stuff that you really don't use. And this is tough for some of us, especially those of us who gather things, who collect things, because you go around and
say it with your chest, hoarders.
Thank you. You're right. Okay, I'm gonna own that. But you think about all the the extra stuff that you have lying around, like old phones or machines that you haven't used for a long, long time, whether it's in the garage, whether it's something that you bought or you were given as a gift that you don't use. I reckon some of us can sell that. I mean, Silicide points out, I don't have a Disney Netflix subscription. So that's a good point. You could also cut those out. I wonder how many people have said bye-bye to DSTV, to Netflix, to all of those kinds of things, because a lot of the stuff, you know, you don't really need. And I wonder whether subscriptions in general have gone right down. We know that Netflix's share price has been hit hard by like millions of people just cutting their Netflix. So if that's happening in America, you better believe it's happening here too, right? Woody says, I'm a gamer. I don't know how much money I've spent on in-game purchases. That's another thing. If you're a serious...
Please tell us, Woody.
If you're a serious
that
gamer...
That thing is costly.
You will spend a fortune on that stuff.
No, it's expensive.
entertainment in general. You know, if you think about people who buy like expensive TVs and entertainment systems at home, even people who spend a lot of money on their cars, that's something that I think we may see a reduction in over the next while. So if you
don't need the shiny rims. The rims don't need to spin. No. I don't want to see my reflection in your rims. We don't need the lights underneath the, like, again, just like tone it down a little bit on the nice to haves, the luxuries. There's this game, Garrett, that my son just is constantly playing. It's called Roblox. It's a craze. And he actually asked me to buy him like Roblox blah blahs, like points or coins or whatever. So I'm like, oh, I mean, sure. How much is it going to be? This child had the nerve to tell me it's only $300. I was like, sorry, it's only 300. He's like, if I get the 300 rand one, then I'll get 1,000 coins. I can get a new jacket for my avatar. I was like, dude, no way. Find another way to get. You see, and imagine, you know, if you're constantly saying yes to your kid for things like that, now you're going to have to start, you know, reconsidering, because it's not only $300 anymore. That's like, you know, enough petrol to get you from here to work every day for the next week. So,
well, this is why I bring it up, is because I don't want this show to just be a place where we talk a whole lot of nonsense. I mean, it's got to be somewhere where you can actually learn some useful things. And Dude 69 disagrees with you and I, Lebang, says you can cut down on booze, become a weekend alcoholic. Nobody needs to drink every day that ends with a letter Y. Yeah, I don't drink during the week anyway, but yes, I hear you. There are lots of people who do, and that's probably where the expenses rack up. When times are hard, switch from heroin to fentanyl. Just takes a little and is to die for. I know you're being sarcastic, parallel parking, but that is mean when there's so many people in America who have exactly that problem. Goldishik says, I just canceled my gym contract, running outside with my dog now, which is actually so much more enjoyable. Well, there's another thing.
Very cool.
You think about how many people have expensive gym contracts and they don't go to the gym. That can save you some money too. Good one. Exactly. I like this. The mistake people make, Gary says, is they try to cut out the big things, but it's the small costs that make all the difference. Give us an example, Gary. What do you mean? We need to know.
I think, for example, the subscriptions, right? So if you have a Netflix account, a DSTV account, a Disney Plus account, a freaking Showmax account, and whatever else is out there, if you put all those little accounts together, that probably comes to around 1,000 rand and then some. Every single month, that's what you're parting ways with. But if you can just like get rid of those small little things, in the long run, you've actually gotten rid of a big chunk. I think that's probably what Gary's, you know, trying to say. Because those things, especially things like subscriptions, they catch you off guard on the 16th, in the middle of the month. Netflix will go clink, and you go ha.
Well, I did.
Come on.
A little while ago, I managed to. This is probably about 2 or 3 years ago. I changed my phone contract, and I get lots more data, and not so many of those other stupid things that I don't use. I mean, how often are you actually calling people, or SMSing? They still charge for SMSs in some places. I'm like, what do I need that for? So I've managed to get that right down. I mentioned insurance earlier because Joe's always on about that whenever Joe Camino's on the show. He told us you've got to ask them to lower your house insurance. And when you do, they sometimes will, or else you move to someone else who definitely will. So those are the kinds of things that we're talking about. Dogoza says, I want to cut my medical aid, but the company that I work for won't let me. I don't know if you should be doing that, because that's probably not such a good idea.
Yeah. And I think negotiating, like having the ability to negotiate, you'll be surprised. Some of these people will actually hear you out and they'll say, okay, cool. You know what? You've got a point. Let me just, I'm currently doing this whole house hunting thing and the transfers and the what's, which is literally milking me to the T.
Yeah.
And the lady that's like handling my transfer fees, I literally just said to her, dude, where do you expect me to get this kind of money? Please find a way to just give me a discount. And she was like, okay. And I was like, oh, it's that easy. So I don't have to pay 300,000. I just ask for less and you'll do it.
If you don't ask, you don't get. That makes a lot of sense.
Exactly.
Jared says you can save a lot of money by not being lazy. I used to buy pre-cooked chicken. I've cut my bill in half by buying fresh chicken and just taking the time to cook it myself every day. That's a good point. Gary also just wants to clear up that he does mean those subscription services, 250 Rand here, 300 Rand there, the wrong phone contract structures. Lebang is spot on. And Stevie says,
yeah.
Hey guys, I can totally relate. Between Roblox and Fortnite, I have had to incentivize for my 9-year-old because, geez, it's insane what they charge for measly little add-ons and skins, etc.
It's crazy.
Amazing.
It's crazy.
It's amazing. And you think about it, for them, there's no cost. It's not like it's coming off a shelf. They just upload the package, you know, and then
exactly.
So it's pure profit.
It's instant gratification. But literally,
for,
yeah.
But for the company that makes
it, for the kids,
it's pure profit. It's amazing.
Companies.
What a thing to sell. Yeah.
And how many kids around the world do you think are like swindling their parents into just giving them the credit card so they can just put in the details and get whatever they want? It's crazy.
Yeah. All right. Well, there's some useful info there, everybody. And I appreciate all the input from people who've got some pretty good ideas about where we can save left, right, and center. Right now, though, I want to reintroduce to you someone who is no stranger to CliffCentral.com and someone who we love to hear from. Every time he comes on, we end up upgrading ourselves in some way. It's like those downloads that you get in the games when you want to up your game, literally and figuratively. You speak to Rich Mulholland. He spent close on 25 years helping multinational organizations, top executives, and international professional speakers to deliver unforgettable presentations that activate audiences. He's spoken in over 30 countries across all 6 continents and is the author of 3 books with a 4th in the pipeline. You may remember the last time we spoke to him, it was about his latest book. He's written Legacide, Boredom Slayer, Here Be Dragons, and he is a vegan, but he tries not to talk about it all the time and fails at that. Here he is, Rich Mulholland. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. Meat is murder.
It's nice to see you, Rich. How are you doing?
To the guy who wants to save money chopping on his chicken.
Yes.
I got an upgrade.
Yeah, but...
No more chicken.
Yeah, but yeah.
I'm doing great.
Yeah,
doing
well, fantastic. I mean...
Hope you guys are well.
I'm not going to cut meat out of my diet, so don't even start with your vegan shit right at the start of the show. We'd prefer to talk about other things. I had an agenda for bringing you on here, and I want to get that out of the way first before we talk, because every time I end up talking to you, and Lebang's going to realize this very quickly too, it ends up becoming like a conversation that goes everywhere, which I love. You know, you're around someone when the conversation doesn't have to have talking points and you don't have to plan it. It's like going for lunch with an old friend. So that's how I feel. But before we get to the old friend part of this, I just want to bring up something that I'm sorry it's taken us so long to get here. But Lebang, you'll catch on quickly. So some guy tweeted a while ago, this is probably like 2-3 months ago. He tweeted a collection of books that he'd laid out on his bed that he was making his way through. And this is the picture he put up there. These are all the books that he's reading. There's a Jeff Bezos book. There are books called like Attitude is Everything. There's Everything is Fucked by Mark Maron. There are a whole lot of books here that you may recognize. Adam Grant is there, Limitless. You know, we've got some business books. We've got some life, books about how you can improve your life, self-help books, those kinds of things. But a nice selection of books here, some of them by famous CEOs, some of them by philosophers, some of them really books that everybody's reading. They're on bestseller lists, a lot of these. And this guy tweeted this out, and he put it out for everybody to see. And I noticed that Rich Mulholland had commented under there, because a whole lot of people had come in and said, those aren't very smart books. You must be an idiot because you're reading books that everybody else is reading. And those books are just going to, turn you into the same as everybody else. And everybody had something critical to say about his selection of books in a country where so few people read. And Rich was like, you know what? All these people who are criticizing your book choice, I wonder how many books they're reading. And if they really think like it, that they're superior to you in some way because they've chosen Tolstoy's War and Peace or, God forbid, something else. So I just wanted to talk to you about that because it resonated with me. I suddenly like it hit a nerve, and I was as annoyed as you were by people who were annoyed with the original guy for putting out the selection of books.
Yeah, so for me, it was a form of this intellectual virtue signaling. Look how intellectual I am because I disagree. I don't read the top 20 books. It's basically the equivalent of I don't listen to the charts music or, I don't
commercial.
Do whatever it is that's popular.
Yeah.
And Intellectual snobbery for me is one of the worst types. You may as well just have retweeted the tweet and said, I am an asshole. I mean, there's just nothing else to it. It's so vapid and empty. And to go to war with anybody promoting reading just seems like such an absurdity to me. Now, for what it's worth, I looked at the list and it was a little bit of an easy list to make. It was the list that was going to get you the most likes and retweets because it was something that most people would have read and the average reader would look at it and think, oh, look how smart I am. I'm on, you know, I've read 10 of the top 20 books and, you know, posted their number on it. So what? So what?
Yeah.
Let them enjoy their moment. I think it's great that people are trying to level up in any regard.
Of course, Rich. And also, we live in a country where, frankly, a lot of people just aren't reading. And some of them aren't reading because they're just lazy. Let's admit that straight up. But some people are not reading because they wish they could just have three of those books. They can't afford to buy any books in you know, the physical form. If they're lucky, they can maybe download some, you know, PDF version of it that's illegally made, you know, they've stolen off the internet maybe. But I don't think a lot of people are even bothering to read because they're just lazy. And reading anything is good for you. I remember talking to someone once who's way smarter than me. And you talk about leveling up. This guy said to me when he grew up, he didn't have a lot of reading material around. He would read everything, the menu, the warning labels on like household appliances. He would read everything he could in whatever language it was written, the label on a shampoo bottle, because it would teach him about the word for this in Arabic or you know, Arabic's hard to read, obviously, but in French or in Spanish or in, you know, whatever the language might have been that was on the label. And I think there's so many people who just, they try to exercise this kind of superiority over others, people they haven't even met, people they don't need to be superior towards, for no reason other than it makes them feel special. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, the flip side to this as well, I actually ended up doing a TED talk about this years ago, is the other side of that, and this is going to maybe sound that I'm being counter my own narrative, but it's not, is that the people who read too much for the sake of reading, mm-hmm. And this is going to sound weird, but I think we consume so many knowledge calories that we forget to burn. And sometimes I think that people are just trying to layer book after book after book after book to make a record. Like, I've read every single major. I've read all 30 of the books that guy laid out on his bed. Mm-hmm. But actually, I think that we need to read. But I think we need to read something. Instead of taking notes in a book, we need to write down actions. And then as a result of the books we read, we need to do something different. I actually think we should do some form of intermittent fasting with intellectual consumption, where we kind of agree that we're not going to start consuming more knowledge calories until we started burning the ones we've already got. Because if we're constantly just feeding our brain, we are so busy consuming the new cognitive calories that we're not actually giving ourselves any time to let the other one settle into our daily habits and use.
And especially with those practical books that are trying to give you those things, you know, I mean, a lot of books are just great stories, or they'll tell you someone else's story, or they'll give you an insight into an idea. But the books that that were largely laid out on the bed, some of those books are practical how-to guides, how to improve your life, how to make better decisions, the magic of thinking big, start with why, you know, the five habits, the 5 a.m. club. These are the kinds of things that are actually practical. People can put them into the way that they do things in their lives. And I mean, Phil Knight's Shoe Dog, for example. A lot of people look at that and go, oh, God, if one more person tells me to read that. But the reason it's become popular is because people want to know that stuff.
Yeah, that book is the top of my list of shame that I really do want to get to reading. But I kind of get to biographies and holidays, and there's always a list and things like that. So I'd like to get there. I do think absolutely that people should read. I also think, by the way, that not enough fiction. We glorify nonfiction, but nowadays, good fiction is so well written and so well researched. And in fact, why I love fiction myself, I'm actually in a book club with Entrepreneurs Organization. We talked about this the other day. And for me, what it is about fiction is that you have to do a lot of the rendering yourself. When I'm consuming a business book, I'm reading it and it's just coming into my brain. But when I'm reading an act of fiction, so say Project Hail Mary, there's so much work that my brain has to do to render all of these little different details, right, to start getting an understanding of the world that has been built. that actually I think that leads to a lot of my personal creativity because I love reading things that are quite require me to do that so often. And I think that people ignore fiction at their peril. Again, that's another big area of intellectual snobbery. Oh, I don't waste time on fiction. That's like eating junk food for the brain. Bullshit.
Yeah, I completely agree. And maybe also because we've become a bit lazy. All the best fiction stories are turned into movies before people can even read them. So it forces you to not have to use your own imagination, right, Lebang? I mean, you don't need to read Harry Potter. Yeah. Just wait for them to come out with the next movie.
Exactly. You can just sort of like watch the next big thing. Rich, I want to find out, like, does this stuff really work? And I would like, I'm playing devil's advocate here, but if I'm reading, you know, like a self-help book that'll tell me 5 habits of this, 5 AM club, does it actually work? And like you're saying, we need to get from a place of just reading to action. For the most part, we're just reading. You know, we're not necessarily like letting it get to that point where it's like, okay, now I'm going to start applying everything that I've just read. So I don't know, I'm a little bit on, you know, on the fence here, because it kind of makes me think about these motivational speakers, which I'm sure you've done quite a bit of in your journey. Think of it. It's like, you know, am I going to listen to a complete stranger tell me how to get my shit together? Or am I the one who's going to, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, right.
Do these books actually work? And how better should I be reading them then so that they work?
Right. So the books don't work. It's not the book's job to work. It's your job to work. And I think that's quite a thing that we have to understand. We're not going to read and intuit. It's not the Matrix. So it's not like that I consume a book and all of a sudden I'm able to do Kung Fu. At some point, yes. I actually have to go and take what I've done and turn it into action. And that's why I say that we confuse notes with actions. So for me, books definitely work. I do every morning from 9 to 10, I do craft hour during the week. And that is where I read books only to do with my profession. And then I sit and I make notes about what it is I learned. And I make sure that I work that into a communication, that I add that into one part of my ritual every day. Every morning before I wake up, I do my 10-10-10, read, write, and reflect. And then I go and I build up things and I question myself. What should I have done more of yesterday? What did I do? What could I have done better yesterday? My to-do better list. And these little small things start getting me to take the new inputs that I get in small 10-minute bursts. And because I'm only reading in these short bursts and I'm trying to take my biggest reflections from there, it allows me to actually become better. So yesterday I went to jiu-jitsu with my kids and we did a two-hour lesson. When I came home, I go into Rome Research, an app I use, and I just went through all the new little bits of information. So the mistakes I was making and things like that, and I took some time to write them down. When I go back to jits again tomorrow night, that's one little detail that will be factored. But the difference is that I realize that I have a job. And generally, that job isn't just while you're reading. If you are not giving yourself reflection time after reading time, your brain is going directly to the next activity. And this is just going into your brain and your RAS, your reticular activation system or whatever. It's just saying, okay, that was junk food. We don't need it, and throws it out. I may be overplaying the RAS here, but it's the same sort of idea. You go into cognitive dumping. And as for motivational speakers, first of all, I hate motivational speakers. I like speakers that actually provide some degree of value. And a lot of speakers who are inspirational do that. But for us, when you write a speech, you've got 4 steps. You want to give them a reason to care, give them a reason to believe, tell them what they need to know, and most importantly, tell them what they need to do. If you look at Al Gore's Inconvenient Truth, at the end of it, he's painted this horrible picture. And at the end of it, he said, guys, I'm asking you one thing. Just use an energy-saving light bulb. That was the action. And what you do is you get people to do one action in the correct direction. And thereafter, they try to be consistent with those actions. So the speaker, and I guess the book, has a job to play, but the smallest of the two jobs. The biggest job is that you decide that you're consuming knowledge, not for the purpose of consumption, but for the purpose of action.
Quick question. Is there an intellectual snobbery attached to listening to an audiobook as opposed to reading the book?
Perhaps. I find audiobooks really, really amazing for great fiction because they're so theatrical. I listen to Atomic Habits on audiobook. And I was on my motorcycle and I would listen and I would, you know, riding and doing these things. But because I'm such an avid note taker and I'd make notes and actions, you're not going to stop, and it's actually harder. So I use a service called Readwise, which takes any highlights I make in a book, and it pops it into my Readwise, and then every morning, this morning included, it reserves me 5 highlights. And those highlights I can actually reflect on. In an audiobook, that's a lot harder. I've got a cat visitor. I'm gonna have to bribe this guy with treats.
I wondered where the cat was coming from.
Yeah, I just snuck in. I'm gonna have a half-naked wife run up the stairs, and you all know Jazz coming to get the cat in a second. So for me, I do think there's another snobbery. So I see both of you have books behind you.
Mm.
I believe that is a form of snobbery. I think there is almost no argument other than for keepsake value that would involve you not using a Kindle when you're reading. I think it is more efficient and better for learning in almost every single way that I could do probably an hour show with you just debating the values of that.
Fair enough. People often say to me when they see these books, they're like, oh, but have you read any of those books? I've read most of them are reference books. I mean, especially like these books are like history, a compendium of English history, for example. So you haven't read every single part of it. But one night I'll pick it up and I'll go, okay, well, let me read this chapter or whatever. But all the books that are biographies or – and I don't read a lot of fiction. It's a failing of mine. I certainly don't think it's stupid to read fiction. But I prefer nonfiction. I have read them and I love them. And some of them I remember and some of them I'll even read twice. But the classics, Rich, there's a volume of really powerful stuff in the classics. You know, the greatest stories of humankind are just repeats of the old hero's journey, which, you know, I mean, Homer had figured that out in the Iliad. And you can go back and read those originals, and it'll blow your mind how much, again, imagination it activates.
Totally. Again, and I'm not saying this to be flippant, but the imagination required in fiction there. And don't get me wrong, Gareth, I do buy books. So my favorite book on presenting is How to Win an Argument by Cicero. I listened to the audiobook first, actually, and I was doing it in my walks in the morning in my craft hour. And I was making these little notes, and I thought, no, I've got to do this again properly. So I got the Kindle version. I did my highlights. And then, so I have all my highlights are all locked away, but that is a book I want an artifact of. Mm. So I got the artifact and I put it on the bookshelf. In fact, our bookshelf downstairs reflects Jazz and I's and the kids to a degree favorite. Most, it would actually be a nice cross section of the books that have made the biggest impact. Another book I added last year that I've not opened, but I've read in full in audio was Matthew McConaughey's Green Lights. That book I thought was just so brilliant that I thought, no, I want an artifact as well. Mm. Now, that site might seem like a weird form of consumerism, but for me, it's not. That becomes the book that I can lend out. That becomes the book that I can chat about and use as a prop in conversation. And I think there's massive value in that. I think maybe I was a bit of the asshole there. I'm not dissing regular books. I'm saying that to look down on e-reading and to see this as a form of you're not doing it properly is the problem. And I think I wasn't clear when I said that. Whereas for me, I think that there's so much efficiency from a learning point of view. I've got a remote control for this. You would laugh. At the side of my bed is an arm that holds up. I climb into my covers and I push the button to turn the pages. Now, that might not sound like a life upgrade until it's like you don't need an air fryer until you have an air fryer. Like, you know. You do not need a remote control to turn pages of a book until you've tried it.
Rich, you mentioned the kids earlier, and I'm glad you did, because this is something I'm currently like having to try and maneuver. It's getting my kids into the habit of like taking reading as like a serious thing. And obviously lead by example, you know, so I'll whip out a book and then it'll be like family time, we'll all read together. But how do I get them to get into the habit of like wanting to read on their own? Because I'm not always going to be there for them to, you know, choose this thing, but I do desperately want to enforce it and make sure that they, you know, view it as an important thing. Because by the time I got to high school, I was like, oh, books, schmooks, books are so annoying, they're so boring, only because I didn't grow up in the kind of household where books were like, you know, really pushed down my throat. And I would kind of like to do that for my kids. So how are you managing that? Is it working? And how can I also get my kids to view books as a real part of their lives?
So both my kids, we kind of encouraged to read, and they went through a phase where they went into fiction. So they did really, really enjoy, I say fiction, more like your fantasies, your, what's his name, Pullman and Rowling, you know, things like that. Okay, so I think Callum really went deep on that. Peter thingy, whatever, I haven't read them, the Greek mythology ones. Mm. And then Bailey was very much into Harry Potter and absolutely finished those and loved them. And that was amazing. What changed though is later, I started getting frustrating because they weren't reading. And then they both said, but we are reading. And what they're reading is manga. And I think I might get a term on web, not webtoons. It might be webtoons. They're these progressive, episodic, little web cartoons that appear on different websites. And my first thought was, no, stop doing that. And, you know, you got to read real books and real things. And then I thought, no, hold on a second. They're reading. It's a start. It's something. They're getting a love of holding a device and doing some consumption. I love comic books, by the way, as well. In fact, at the moment, I'm working through the Sapiens Volume 2, which is the graphical version of the book. And actually, I'm preferring it. I think it's quite magnificent and beautifully done. And I do enjoy comic books, but I do think that it gives some of the rendering, you know, you're kind of watching as opposed to just creating. But right now, I'm not going to war with any of that. As long as they're doing something to consume content by reading, that's a good start for me. And if your kids, if you're not going to win them over with the likes of here's, you know, the Harry Potter series or Star Wars or whatever the case may be, because it's 1970. But but if you're not going to win them over with that, I would seriously, I mean, in fact, you wouldn't even have to. They will probably be leaning into manga or these webtoons and things like that themselves.
There's a current like obsession with anime, which I'm like, okay, cool, that's not bad, because that's not too far off from manga and stuff, so I'll see how it goes.
And
how's
that any different to the Asterix books that I was addicted to when I was a kid? I mean, it's the same, totally. Right? And it's just beautifully done. So Congo Chris says that fiction often paves the way for real life. Isaac Asimov wrote lots of science fiction and now is considered the grandfather of robotics and AI. That's absolutely right. If you laugh at or see what I did in my last comment, you're a genius. So here's what Sanele wants. He wants us to give him credit for this. Just hit me. I've read everything and only listened to two audiobooks, Will Smith's and Trevor Noah's. It's funny that. Okay.
I get it.
Let's just give him a round of applause so he can feel good about himself. So, Rich, a lot of people commenting on, and the last time you were on, you told us how to upgrade our web, you know, our participation in meetings online and being able to do virtual meetings and all the rest of it. You help people with some software that would get their cameras upgraded, make their background look better. I saw Darren said just now, look at that. I saw Darren said just now, you look like you've just woken up in a nightclub. Looks pretty damn cool there.
It does.
I got my lights in control, you know, can look at this. Change things around.
Wow, look at that.
Fancy.
That's good. But this stuff, it does help. And I mean, if you are still sitting around, you said this maybe a year and a half ago, if you're still sitting around after all this time that we've been kind of changing the way that we do stuff, working from home, doing things virtually, you are being stupid, because you're going to be left behind. If not, you're already left behind.
Yeah, but please keep doing it, right? Because it's making the few of us make an effort look better. Yeah. And that's really, really helpful. a tiny amount. You know how they say that how good looking a lot of people are is simply the difference between effort and lack of effort. Mm-hmm. Like average people put in a bit of effort and they look much better. I kind of feel that that's the same in how you show up into meetings, is that all that people get to see when I arrive in a meeting, and even though, you know, like I'm off to Boston next week and then Seattle the week after, and I have had to start leaving home a little bit to work, and I understand that's going to happen.
Right.
However, I'm still doing my sales meetings this way, and I'm still going to show up, and people still comment on the background and the effect and how things are. And if I bring up slides and content, you know, and make those appear, people will always say, hey, how did you do that? And of course, you know, we're a presentation company, and that's helpful. But for anybody, just leveling up ever so slightly is an unfair advantage for you. And I think that people are now saying, but we're going back to offices and things like that. A lot of businesses are going back 2 or 3 days a week. Mm-hmm. That's because they want to be around themselves. If you are in any type of sales or business development, or, you know, general day-to-day meetings, they're still primarily going to happen this way because it's simply more efficient.
Correct.
So most of your externally facing meetings where you're meeting a customer maybe externally for the first time or for an update is still going to happen this way. Why would you not want to put your best foot forward? These little strip lights on Amazon shipped directly to my house in South Africa, I don't know, but maybe I've got some slightly more expensive ones. But for the most part, those strip lights, I maybe spent like 2,000 rand on. And I understand for some people that's a material amount, but it's not when you start looking more impressive, getting that promotion, winning, you know, those deals and things like that. It's a small little investment. And if people started looking at this as an investment as opposed to a burden or a grudge purchase, and they changed their mindset around that and saying, like, how can I give myself and my career an unfair advantage? Because all of a sudden, your background speaks about you and not your company. Whereas for forever, if you appeared in any way and you had a meeting, everything other than you is a message about just your business.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's a message about you yourself. And people are not, they're kind of saying, well, if the company doesn't pay for this, but I think they're doing it at their peril.
Also, I mean, if you're going to invest in your brain, which is the whole reason we started talking about books, then you got to invest in everything else too. Try to upgrade everything simultaneously so isn't some part of you left behind in the old you that makes it look like you're dated and irrelevant.
Yeah, investing in yourself is a core part of my, I guess, my belief system. I work under this premise. I've now come to terms with the fact that I just think of myself, current, I believe there are three versions of us, past, present, and future. And the only job of the present version of ourselves is to curate a better future for the person that comes tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
So fill up the petrol on the way home. I think we've even spoken about this before. Mm-hmm. Fill up the petrol on the way home. Untie your shoelaces when you take them off. Small little things like that. But actually, spending some time upgrading your environment, your system, yourself. I spend an hour a day, as I said, focusing only on the job, literally reading books and consuming presentations about the job that I have done for the last 25 years. The cool thing is that I'm reading all my competitors' books and they're not reading mine. What an unfair advantage. What an unfair advantage. Oh, and by the way, the other thing is, I thought I was special. I thought my 25 years counted for something. With one possible exception, I have not read a single book about presentations or public speaking or any related field that hasn't taught me a ton about this profession that I thought I had dialed in.
Yeah, you see a little humility. You also see that when you're spreading yourself over a bunch of other source material and you're figuring out you don't actually have any. Nothing's original either, right, Rich? Nothing's original. Stop getting worried about
being new under the sun.
Yeah, you're not Leonardo da Vinci, but you can learn all the things that he learned.
So, and that's the job of the authors and the creator. That's your job right now, right? You guys are sharing ideas with people, but what you're doing is there's an intersection that exists between the world's knowledge and how that impacts us right now. And my job is to take the works of Cicero, right, or any of the great rhetors or anybody like that, and even people, Dale Carnegie a bit later, and Nancy Duarte and Gar Reynolds, and to try create a version of that that is the most relevant, that lands with the most relevant for now. The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck, which I actually couldn't listen to, bizarrely, I swear, but Jazz and I actually had to turn it off. We were listening on a long drive on an audiobook, and it was just like, this guy says fuck too much. It's actually, the joke is wearing off. I mean, I actually couldn't listen to it. Not technically, I'm sure it's a brilliant book, but it's basically Don't Sweat the Small Stuff, a book from years before that has been rewritten. Infinite Game by Simon Sinek. A lot of people love that book, but you could also just go to the source and read Finite and Infinite Games by Kars. This stuff, and I'm not taking anything away. In fact, I think that's your biggest opportunity. If you're not sure what to talk about, or what if you want to be a speaker, or you're not sure what to write about, if you want to be an author, take your favorite content from 10 years ago and rewrite it with more relevance today. Just get a spin on it. Have one idea that's counterintuitive or counter-narrative.
Yeah, that's such good advice. That is so helpful. I'm going to put that into practice myself this morning. So you see, I've already found a reason to upgrade. What do you think, Lebang?
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. There's nothing new under the sun, but there's always how you do it. It's the same thing with content creation. It's like, especially now with social media, everybody wants to be a content creator because it just looks so cool. But there's so much content out there. Where do you start? find what you like and just, you know, zhuzh it up, remix it, do it in your special way. But there's nothing new under the sun. And if you know that, then you'll appreciate the way that you do things. So I'm with you, Rich. I'm with you.
My wife, she's been on the show a number of times. She's an artist. And when she started working, a lot of people said her work is a lot like an artist called Basquiat.
Hmm.
And that was her point of view. She was like, oh, I like that. That inspired her to create her own. But when I look at her downstairs, she's actually got a show coming up next month. When I look at her downstairs, I don't think for a single second, in fact, when people make that Basquiat reference, it kind of feels to me like it's almost that cheap joke. Like it's a style. It's such an easy one to make. But when we understand, when we stop punishing people for having a source of inspiration, and again, this goes all back to this idea of intellectual snobbery.
Absolutely.
At the very, very beginning.
Yeah,
it's okay that your work is that's so derivative. Correct. Well done, Captain Obvious. Everything is derivative. Start celebrating the derivations.
Yeah, but you know where this comes from. This comes from people who are trying to just categorize things. It's very hard. We're pattern-seeking mammals, and we try to find a way of making sense of the world around us. And sometimes there's too much information, so we simplify it by stereotyping or by looking at something and going, oh, well, that's just a version of. Because then our brain can, in an orderly fashion, file it somewhere. That's really all our brain's trying to do. We think we're terribly creative and hugely inspirational, and we've got lots of complicated factors all working at the same time. Your brain is actually just a pattern recognition machine, really. And if you can figure that out, then you can also get beyond the snobbery of saying, well, that person is just a kind of this, and start to appreciate it for what it is.
Yeah, for me, and I talk quite a bit about this, but everything about this intersection idea, your brain, all you're trying to do is to create a better coordinate in somebody's brain. You know, if you go to New York City and you ask somebody for directions, they won't say it's on, you know, 500, or go up to 500, you know, 37th Street or whatever. Mm-hmm. They'll say go to, oh, you're going to go to the intersection of 5th and West 47th.
Mm-hmm.
Because they've created a point that you actually now have multiple points of reference. And in fact, that's all most ideas are. It's this, but that.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, one of my frustrations with most branding, the way that we present ourselves, is that we present ourselves only by trying to widen the avenue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I am in the presentation industry and we're widening the avenue. For years, our why was that we wanted to be, you know, a little bit unconventional. Whereas now we want it to be about that, but process. And I think that everybody's got to figure that out. And when you look at most books that you read, they are taking book A and they're just simply creating a new spin on it. Instead, yeah. If we start seeing that as the goal, then I think it will change how we perceive the world around us. We will understand actually how our brain works better, and it will make us better creators.
I love it.
Yeah.
And I love it. I'm afraid we're going to have to end it there because we're out of time. But as usual, it's lovely to spend some time with you, Rich. And we will speak to you again soon. Have an excellent trip to America. Mm-hmm. I hope you don't have to mask up or get the monkeypox vaccine or any of that shit while you're over there. And let us know how it goes.
Yeah, me too. Fingers crossed. Thanks so much for having me. It was wonderful chatting to you guys.
All right, man. Thank you so much. Rich Mulholland. And he says he's got a new book coming out, which is going to be fantastic. I like the way he said,
dude,
here's your why. Here's your why. But actually, the y-axis is that one. But I love the idea. The X and the Y.
Yeah.
Don't focus only on the Y.
He seems very wise. If anybody said to me that my art looks like Basquiat, dude, that is a compliment. I'm like, thank you very much. Because, yeah, it inspired me. If we focus on, you know, what you can take from the from the source, I love that. I'm going to actually start applying that right now.
Damn right. I've got a list of things now I have to do. So,
right,
let's get on to it. All right, everybody, have a happy day. And we will see you tomorrow morning at 6 o'clock. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye. CliffCentral.com.